26 minutes to 9 o'clock. This is the Karima Brown Show, and you're, of course, listening to 702. The conversation we're having tonight is who benefits from a compromise collapse Zondo Commission. We're unpacking the various aspects of it. And, of course, I was just speaking with Professor Mark Swilling, the author, co-author of The Shadow State and, of course, also The Betrayal of the Promise. And he is saying that it is unsurprising that the commission is coming under this kind of attack. And he ended off by speaking about the fact that the majority of ANC members are getting the information from fake news and making decisions in a context of conspiracy and not listening to the facts that are coming out of the commission. And that, of course, bedevils the entire process. Now, the Sunday Times has dismissed a statement which claims a reporter was suspended for refusing to write a fabricated front page article about the links between former President Jacob Zuma and the Bosasa scandal as a fake. The statement, which is being circulated on WhatsApp, was purportedly written by a Sunday Times journalist and alleges an editor at the publication forced the reporter to fabricate an article connecting Jacob Zuma's foundation head Dudu Mnyeni and Environmental Affairs Minister Nomvula Mokonyane to the allegations of corruption at Bosasa. Farida Joyce is the journalist whose name is attached to the statement, and she's also being going to be joining us. But let me start off with the Sunday Times political editor, Sibonga Konke Shoba, to set the record straight. Mr. Shoba, just tell us factually, Ms. Farida Joyce, has she ever worked for your team or in any other part of Tiso Black Star's business? Has she ever written an article for the Sunday Times?
Good evening, Karima, and good evening to your listeners. Thank you so much for having us on your show. Ms. Farida Joyce has never worked for the Sunday Times. She has also come out to state that as a fact that she has never worked for the Sunday Times. And my team, we've got five reporters in Johannesburg and two in Cape Town, and none of them are named Farida Joyce.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, when you received this message, apparently it was widely spread over WhatsApp. It obviously came against the background that the Sunday Times had to apologize for the way it reported on what was going on at SARS. And so the idea was to take advantage of the fact that the Sunday Times has had a reputational damage in terms of these stories. But how quickly were you able to set the record straight, Sibonga Konke?
You are correct. It's part of a strategy to take advantage of those apologies that we had to issue. And it's part of a strategy to further discredit the Sunday Times and also to intimidate Sunday Times journalists. I got the WhatsApp message from someone who used to work in Zuma's office that I won't mention.
Yes.
And they were saying to me, what is this? What is happening?
Mm.
And then I was able to say to him, but this is nonsense. But then I discovered later that it's widespread.
Mm.
But Karima, let me take you back. It started on Saturday.
Yes.
We were writing the story.
Mm.
Questions that we had sent to people who were mentioned in the story were distributed to WhatsApp groups of the ANC.
Mm.
I got one of the messages that are around 5 p.m. And that person had initially were looking for that person and sending messages. They were saying the person is not available, is in a meeting. But the person was able to distribute the message to ANC members who started attacking us then to say, this is what we're going to write, writing lies about them.
Mm.
And part of the strategy to also not just discredit the Sunday Times, but also to intimidate journalists from writing these stories. Because as soon as you write such a story, they go out, they spread lies, and then you get attacked by their supporters on social media. So it's meant to intimidate us so that we are not able to do our job.
Absolutely. Now, we are very lucky to have Farida Joyce with us. She is a journalist, and it was, of course, under a fake account that she was attached to the statement. She's a former news producer at The New Age and ANN7. Ms. Joyce, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Karima, and good evening to the listeners as well. I'd like to also thank you for giving me the opportunity to actually clear my name and actually give my side of the story.
Yes. Ms. Joyce, can you just speak directly into your phone because we're just struggling to hear you a little bit. I just want to start off. When did you realize that your name is being used in a fake story to try and discredit the Sunday Times?
On Sunday morning, I received a call from one of my former colleagues from ANN7. Mm-hmm. She had sent me the copy of the article, actually the open letter, and said to me that my name is attached at the bottom of the letter. Mm. And I laughed it off, and I said to her, no, this cannot be. So I read through the article and found that my name was actually at the bottom, mm. and there was actually a number attached
yes.
to the open letter. That was the first time that I heard about it. Was Sunday morning, I think. No, actually, midday, I think around 1:30.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone from the group that you used to work for, because, I mean, it's no secret that both the New Age and ANN7 belonged to the Guptas before they sold it to Mzwanele Manye, and, of course, were often said to be very clearly identified with the agenda, the political agenda of former President Jacob Zuma. Were you surprised that they chose you, as opposed to anybody else who used to work there? I mean, you were a news producer at the organization. Why do you think they chose your name?
I'm actually surprised that my name would have been chosen, because I'm actually a young upcoming journalist. I'm actually not really known in the industry. Mm. I've only been in the industry for 4 years, but I feel like, yes, there may be a connection between the fact that I was actually an employee at companies that were actually owned by the Gupta family. So I feel in that way, this is how my name was implicated into the open letter.
Now, Farida, what steps have you taken to tell the world? Because there's a lot of people who believe the story. Because if you look at how the story is written, it's very well constructed. And we know that people have short attention spans. Often they read half the story and they leave it. They don't even look at who they wrote. They just say, oh my God, the Sunday Times is at it again. And then, of course, the message lands. What steps did you take to address the fact that this is a complete fabrication and you've got absolutely nothing to do with it?
I was actually approached, I was called by the Sunday Times editor, mm-hmm. Mr. Bongani. He actually wanted to find out from me if I had actually written the open letter that at that time had gone viral.
Yes.
So I said to him, the best thing that I can do is to put out a Twitter post and tag the Sunday Times, distancing myself from the article that was from the open letter that was written, distance myself, and also to say that I've never actually worked at the Sunday Times. I've actually never even been at the offices of the Sunday Times. I've never actually been at a piece of black stuff holding in my life.
Mm.
So I went out on Twitter. I did post a tweet,
yes,
with the attachment of the open letter and indicating that it was not written by me, I'm not the author. Secondly, I do not know the number at the bottom,
yes,
of the open letter. That number does not belong to me. I have never seen that number before, and I've never used such a number before. So I would like to appeal to people to just go onto my Twitter account and please retweet that tweet so that we can get it out. And yeah, it was actually not written by me.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, but before we do so, I just want to read part of the fake news story that was put out. The big highlight was that I will be fired for refusing to lie about Dudu Myeni, Nomvula Mokonyane and Claudia Motsoeneng. That is the Sunday Times I work for. That is the media in 2019. I've been a journalist for 10 years. I've worked at the Star as a reporter. I joined the Sunday Times at the closure of the New Age. On Monday, the 14th of January, the editor gave me strict instructions towards today's front front page. I was assigned to cover the state capture inquiry as Agretti's testimony would like to make the front page. And so it goes on, quite a lot of detail. I'm going to be speaking with Furiel Hafaji, the associate editor at the Daily Maverick, and William Bird, the executive director at Media Monitoring Africa, about this phenomena of inserting fake news and what the purposes behind it is. We're going to take a short break. Don't go anywhere. It is, 11 minutes to 9 o'clock. This is the Karima Brown Show, and you're listening to 702. We're asking the question, who benefits from a collapsed, compromised Zondo Commission of Inquiry? My next two guests is Furiel Hafaji. She's the Associate Editor at the Daily Maverick. Ms. Hafaji, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Karima.
And then I've got Executive Director at Media Monitoring Africa, Mr. William Bird. Mr. Bird, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let me start with you, Ms. Hafaji, because you were in the eye of the storm as well. You've also been trolled and a lot of fabrications written about you. The fact that we had both the political editor of the Sunday Times and the woman who supposedly have written the story both denying it, and some people still actually holding onto that narrative. What is the political purpose behind inserting that kind of fabrication into the context, of understanding the Commission of Inquiry?
I suppose, Karima, that we have to go back to our big experience of disinformation campaigns, and that was Bell Pottinger and his work for the Gupta family, where they created narratives and they realized that the most important way we get and share news these days is via social media.
Yeah.
So they did that, and I'd argue in quite a sophisticated way, until they were unmasked by our excellent army of cyber police. The people who have started the disinformation campaign since last week are far less sophisticated. Mm. So I was quite surprised to hear that that story got as far as it did, which just tells me that WhatsApp really is now possibly becoming bigger and more powerful a tool for the spread of disinformation than Twitter. But I really loved how Ms. Joyce and Kanita Hunter and the Sunday Times very quickly outed that as disinformation.
Mm-hmm. William Bird, I mean, Furiel raises an important point. She takes us back to the era of Bell Pottinger, which was, of course, an international company hired by the Gupta family to manage the messaging of their political project under state capture. And, of course, they put an army of automated bots in there, attacked journalists. We've had to take out restraining orders. You've had attacks on journalists, physical and verbal. What is this a sign of in terms of the maturity of our politics? I mean, Professor Swilling said that the state capture people haven't vanished simply because Cyril Ramaphosa is now the president, that there are enclaves of these people everywhere, and there are many, many people that obviously would benefit if this commission is unable to do its work or unable to be believed or have credibility.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a development of our politics, but certainly it's a trend that's emerging around the world, that this is the way you deal with irritating journalists. You know, you seek to silence them these days through disinformation and through trolling them and essentially shouting them down and abuse, cyber bullying and cyber abusing them until they either silence themselves or, you know, they lose credibility. And that's the modern form of censorship. So the people that are doing this, you know, not just pursuing their own greedy, grubby ends or corrupt or criminal ends even, but they're also doing it in a manner that deeply and profoundly undermines the very basics of our democratic state. And it's completely and fundamentally unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, certainly in the example around Bell Pottinger, even though that company went under, very few of the people involved have been exposed. Mm. We know about some of the leaders, but certainly a lot of the networks that were set up to varying degrees are still there.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting what you say, William. I want to bring Furiel in here. You know, Furiel, when I sent Mr. Agresi's affidavit to somebody that I knew, a longtime source of mine, the person said to me, you guys must stop this. The commission is going to collapse. There's an attempt to collapse the commission. And I've just received documentation that is written by lawyers of Ms. Nomvula Mokonyane, the current Minister of Environmental Affairs. And she is saying here, our client has to date not been furnished with reasons for the commission to resolve or decide or to deviate from Rule 3.3 insofar as it relates to the evidence of Mr. Agresi. The commission has not afforded our client an opportunity at least make representation before such a decision was taken by the commission. The failure by the commission to afford our client reasons or an opportunity to consider such decisions and make representation constitutes a breach of our client's constitutional rights to procedural fairness. I mean, the script is written for you. You know, you get the attempt to disseminate the information. You get the attempt to say that it's politically motivated. And here lands Ms. Nomvula Mokonyane's letter from her lawyers saying that the commission is behaving unconstitutionally, Furiel. It's like a script that has been written before and everyone is just playing their part.
Absolutely. But what interests me, Karima, is that the minister can't just say, I didn't get 50,000 rand a month, I didn't get expensive liquor, and I didn't ask for my daughter to get an A3, which in itself is a story. But you're right, they will pick on that. Although that, I think the lawyer hasn't carefully read the rules, because the rules do apply for you to delay argument from the other side, as laid out chapter and verse by Paul Pretorius, the head of legal at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry.
Which was done with Barbara Hogan, remember? Barbara Hogan's second affidavit had mentioned more people, and those people were then given an opportunity. So it actually can be done.
It can be done. It's a bit like our rule in journalism, where if you think that your story is going to be scuppered, you can forego the right to reply. You really have to answer very big questions from the ombud, and I'd argue before a judge. But there are these rules of evidence that do take into account things like threat to life, the chance of the collapse of the commission. It's there in the rules of evidence. As someone who sat at the commission for 3 months now, I do think people are going to try this. I find it very worrying that its vetting processes didn't pick up the history of Mr. Hotso de Vere.
Precisely. Justice. I mean, surely Mr. Masuta has to answer for that. I mean, he is supposed to provide the infrastructure for the commission.
Yes. There were big problems around how long vetting was taking to happen. But again, maybe that goes to the quality of our state security services, who were responsible ultimately for vetting everybody employed by the Zondo Commission of Inquiry. They were the stewards of due diligence, not the judge. Watching that judge, I must say, for 3 months now, he's not someone who puts up with nonsense. And I think any attempt to collapse this commission, which is like the absolute opposite of useless commissions like the Sariti Commission into the Arms Inquiry, they're going to come short, because this is not somebody that you play with. I'm sure they're going to try again and again and again. In addition to the Farida Joyce letter, there's a number of Twitter accounts that suddenly came up to denounce Agresi, who I'm sure is a contestable character, but to denounce what is being heard and to further spread this information. I think it's going to be the story for the years of this commission's life, because it's telling us things we really need to know.
But I mean, we need to be reconnecting the dots. I mean, William, in Ms. Nomvula Mokonyane's letter, she says, it may be that the allegations made by Ms. Farida are unfounded, but such a conclusion should be preceded by a proper investigation to eliminate any suspicion of collusion by the officials of the commission and the media. I mean, it appears to me as if the people who faked the account of Farida Joyce sat with the lawyers of Ms. Nomvula Mokonyane. I mean, it fits into each other like a puzzle.
Yeah, and it's a pretty classic tactic, isn't it? You know, shoot the messenger, blame the media, whenever things start to go south. south for you, you know. And unfortunately, you know, this is something that we have to deal with, which I guess is why it's so critical that the commission continues to carry its work out with, you know, beyond reproach.
Yeah.
I think that there's some critical rules that we're going to be challenging around making sure that our journalists get access to the full witness statements on the day that they start testifying, not having to wait till after that, because otherwise it gives all of those who seek to spread disinformation an ample opportunity to put out documents that they've already fiddled with. You know?
Absolutely.
And ask, if something does get leaked like that, as we've seen previously, whose interest does it serve to put forward things that you can't test?
But Firio, isn't this classic? I mean, this is what happened with the Zuma matter. Remember the questions that the NPA sent to him was leaked to the media. And then he was saying that, in fact, this prejudices him. But everybody knew the leak came from the Zuma camp. I mean, it's the same MO all over again.
Again and again and again, the leaks are coming from the people, the very people, I believe, who are given an opportunity to respond. So it does place the judge in a difficult position.
Yes.
Just a quick reminder, Karima, that Operation Spiderweb, the document which attempted to create massive disinformation around the National Treasury before the minister was fired, came off the computer of Ms. Dudu Mayeni, who is quite central to the story of Bosasa.
Yes.
And I think what you're seeing is a coalition of what we can loosely call capture interest coming together to fight this truth coming out.
Absolutely. The fight is far from over. And we, of course, as journalists need to be vigilant. But more importantly, we need to be able to give our listeners and the public the facts so that they can actually make up their minds. We must refuse the forces who's trying to make it difficult for us to tell the truth from a lie. We must refuse them that opportunity. We must be able to exercise our faculty. Firio Hafidji, William Bird, thank you very much for your time. It's just gone 9 o'clock. It's time for Eyewitness News.